Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Anatomy of a Movie, where we review movies, we talk about all things character development, the actors, the writing, everything you want to know about the film. And today, we are breaking down Pixar's Onward, and I have two wonderful, wonderful people with me. First of all, we have a Pixar super fan in the house, y'all, a super fan. That is Kevin Allen. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. I love this movie. It was the last movie I got to see before the world shut down, so it left me in a good place.
In theaters. In the theater? Wow.
Nice. I saw it in theaters. My girlfriend was like, I really want to go see this movie. And I did too. But I think we should do it today. And it ended up being the day that they made the announcement to shut everything down. So we got it just in time.
Oh my God.
Amazing. Amazing. And we also have senior producer of the Popcorn Talk Network and host of the Star Wars news show, Ryan Nilsson.
What's
everybody.
Going on, y'all? I'm so excited to talk about this. I saw that it was on Disney Plus on Friday, and I went yes immediately because I just didn't want to pay the $20 on iTunes or on any other place. But I'm so happy I saw it. Oddly enough, I would have paid the $20 to see it in theaters. And Isn't it so weird that we're talking about theaters like it's a pastime? I can't believe that's happening. But I am really excited to talk about Onward.
Us too. Well, why don't you start us off, Ryan? Give us a little background production info about the film.
Yeah, totally. So Onward is the latest film out of Pixar. I think it's their 20th film, believe it or not. Oh my God, crazy.
They're at 20 already?
Yeah, they're at 20, which is wild. And it follows two brothers, which are Ian and Barley Lightfoot, in this magical fantasy land, but it's 2020 and there are cars and everything's suburbanized and magic is kind of lost in this world. And anyway, both these brothers, they grew up fatherless. Ian was born right before his father passed away and never knew his dad. And on his 16th birthday, he's given a gift. It was timed. Here's a gift. Finds out his dad was a wizard and has left one spell that he can talk to his dad for one day. But as things go wrong, you know, not everything always goes as planned. Only half the dad, only his legs really come back. So they need to go on this big quest that's very Dungeons and Dragons-esque, very Lord of the Rings-like, to go find this orb that is going to bring back the rest of their dad so they can spend the remaining 24 hours getting to know him. Onward. Holy cow.
Boom.
Yeah, it's a very cliched plot. A lot of people, we've seen this 80,000 times before. No, I've never seen this. This is it's the most wild story, but it's pretty sweet.
Amazing. Well, why don't we get everyone's overall thoughts on the film? Starting with you, Kev, what do you think?
I loved it. It surprised me in the most pleasant and magnificent of ways. Initially going into the film, there was just something about the promotion for the movie that I thought was a little lackluster. I kind of got the feeling it could be another Good Dinosaur, which isn't a bad film, but it's just usually not up to Pixar's standards, in my opinion. So I kind of went into it with a little bit of hesitation going, this could either be really good or just really kind of cliche doing this fantasy trope. But it was really, really good. It was not cliche by any means. It was unlike any other fantasy film I've seen in a long time. The message, really hit me. It caught me by surprise and I was blown away by Pixar continually raising the bar on itself.
Yeah.
Fantastic film. I can't recommend it enough.
Brian, what'd you think?
Overall thoughts, you know, I was really surprised by this movie because I actually thought it looked like what Kevin was kind of saying. I think there's some tiers of Pixar. They're not all incredible home runs, even though they do make really good films. There's like the top tier Pixar, and then there's like that Pixar light, which I think you would categorize like A Good Dinosaur or like even some of the Cars sequels. Looked like it was going to be in that category, but this surprised me, and I actually do think it is a really, really great Pixar movie. If you have brothers, it's like a brother and a dad movie to the core, and I think overall, you know, it has a really great emotional ending. A really fun setup throughout. I think it kind of teeters off and meanders a little too long in certain areas, and also wastes a little bit of some of the voice talent, but overall really, really like this movie quite a lot.
So I had no intention of seeing this movie, which is a little off-brand for me, because I do love animated films, but unlike the two of you, I don't really know the difference on who's releasing what and when. And this one, did I know, you both
you didn't know
quiet
this
and your eyes shut. No.
Okay.
Okay?
All good.
Good deal with it. Tell them the truth today, okay?
My coffee.
That's okay.
Please, sip away.
No, please. So I appreciate the honesty.
I had no intention of watching the film. and then people, because of Disney Plus, which I'm very thankful for, early releases of all of these digital platforms, people were saying, watch this, even within the first day. So I did it. And I liked it-ish.
Ish, okay.
So that is...
You can be honest. It's okay.
There's a lot. No, it's true. I did like it-ish. There's some plot things that were messy that we'll talk about later. I think a lot of the characters weren't explored as much as I would love them to be, because we have a killer voice cast in like maybe 8 of the characters, and we didn't get to see a lot of them, but the story was great. Took a turn at the end, wasn't sure what was going to happen. So I was paying attention the whole time, which I can totally, totally appreciate. So those are my thoughts.
I'm just curious, and I don't want to get too personal, but who here has like an older sibling or younger sibling? Because I have a younger brother. Okay, so we all have siblings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that this, like that impacts your experience with this movie, or do you think that really doesn't carry a sword?
I think it depends on the relationship. I have a brother who is 7 years older than I am. And so we never had adventures like these types of things. Not that other people do, or not that there are wizards around when we were kids. But you know what I mean? Like, we just grew up kind of separately. So I didn't have the sibling connection that I did think of you right away, Ryan, because I know that you're close to your brother. And so I knew that connection would get you more than it got me. Kevin, what about you?
I do have a younger brother, and when we were growing up, not to say that like our parents ever labeled us as this, but I was the promising, well-behaved student, and he was kind of the reckless one who just wanted to ride BMX and be a badass. I remember, like, we actually had the same class my senior year of high school. He was a freshman, I was a senior. And we had an elective together, and our teacher was floored when she found out that we were related, because she was like, you guys are such night and day. Like, you're nothing alike. How are you responsible for him? I kind of noted that dynamic in this film, and he was definitely on my mind a lot throughout. But as I grew older and wiser, I came to appreciate him and realize that he's not a screw up. He's not completely reckless. He has his life together a lot better than I think I do now.
There you go.
So if it wasn't for the fact that I've already kind of had that growth as a person that Ian did, this I'm sure would have hit me even harder.
Yeah.
But I kind of had already walked that line. So revisiting it, I just felt more appreciative of him.
Well, let's get right into it, guys. We are going to be talking about little things that everybody wants to talk about today. Themes, characters, plot lines. But we did just want to thank you guys for tuning in to the Popcorn Talk Network. We love talking about movies, guys, and we love that you love listening to us talk about movies, maybe carry on the conversation after our shows. So thank you so much. Subscribe to the channel. Like below, comment on your thoughts below. We know it's not just our opinions that are floating around. So thank you so much for tuning in. We have a really, really fun show for you today. We're going to talk about all of our topics. We're going to do a little trivia, see if the guys can hang,
right,
handle the questions.
Right.
Okay. And then
we'll see.
We're going to do our own ratings on the film, and then we'll wrap it up from there. So let's start with Ryan Nilsson. Let's talk about the themes that you want to talk about today.
Big time, yeah. And I think I foolishly omitted something earlier where I just wanted to mention some of the voice cast. You know, we had Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
As well as Tom Holland, Spider-Man, Julie Louis-Dreyfus, and Octavia Spencer, directed by Dan Scanlon, also written by him, Jason Headley, and Keith Boonen. The first topic I was going to just bring up was just some highlights in the movie. I think I have this, I'm really curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this. I think the highlights of this film are also what makes it the most divisive. I don't think that this movie is for everyone, like a lot of other Pixar movies, but I think it's going to land really hard for some. I think, like I said, if you have, I don't necessarily think you have to have a close relationship with a sibling or even like, you know, not have grown up with a father to connect with this. But I think if you can buy into the fantasy elements of this movie, which are so fun, I also think that they're a little divisive. So for those who might not be as big into that whole fantasy genre or like Dungeons and Dragons or going on a quest, I don't know if this is going to necessarily gravitate towards you. I mean, what do you guys think?
I kind of disagree a little bit. I can see why that would be off-putting to a lot of people, because that Dungeons and Dragons and a lot of fantasy lore is a whole nother universe. Mm-hmm. And it seems like this film is drawing from common references in the fantasy genre and throwing so much of it in there that I can imagine it being overwhelming. I've never played Dungeons and Dragons myself. I have a lot of friends who have, but I've never dove into that universe. And so it was one thing that I was like, okay, all my friends who are super fantasy nerds are really excited for this movie. I'm just not that excited because it's just not speaking to me. But I love alternate universes, and I love the idea of meshing the worlds of yore with the current lifestyle we have. And so for that, I was able to identify with the idea that people drive cars and take planes and want an easier life and have light switches. So that's, I feel like, a marquee of a successful movie is when you take something that's familiar and something that's foreign and put them together. So all the fantasy stuff was just kind of new and exciting for me. And it didn't, like, nothing was so out there that I couldn't comprehend it or follow along. The exposition it gave in the beginning about this is how magic worked and now we don't really use it anymore, it told me everything I need to know to follow the film. And then the things that I weren't really privy to, like the gelatinous cube, I know that that is a big thing in Dungeons and Dragons, but I found out that the week the movie came out. And I don't really know what it means. I don't really know the significance of it, but the way they used it in the film was like, if I had no clue about it, it was just this silly joke, this running gag that had a payoff at the end.
That's so funny, because I've played Dungeons and Dragons and I don't know what that is. I still I still have no clue. That completely surprised me. I mean, Trina, did you find the fantasy elements at all divisive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I didn't want to see it.
Yeah.
Because the usual animated film that I'm down with is cute, I guess. And cute animals and cute things and like Bao and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, love is Bao a Pixar?
Bao is a Pixar that played in front of Inside Out.
Ha! Yeah. Take that.
Or Finding Dory. Anyway.
Either way, it's a Pixar. We don't care.
It's killed it. Yeah, about the bun, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Pixar.
So the fantasy stuff, that's what threw me off in the beginning to even want to see it. And I just have no idea about the world and completely uninterested in it. But that's my bad, because I completely lack imagination when it comes to that sort of thing. I can't really figure out how to even make that possible to work in my brain. But that being said, the two boys were pretty real. And so it took me out of that for the most part. I think I kind of just didn't pay attention to the other stuff. And the Octavia Spencer character, I wasn't really paying attention to the magic of her. I was just paying attention to how funny she was. And I think that a big group that is going to really get something from this film are people that have lost someone. We don't really deal with grief a lot in anything other than tragic dramas. Mm. Any other format of filmmaking, storytelling, we don't deal with grief in a realistic way a lot of the time, especially for young people. And so I think that is a big group of people that are really going to benefit from this film, and I hope they watch it. I know it's very surface level in comparison to the actual grieving process, but by the end, we really got there to a couple of points that were very necessary for both of the boys to make, and I think those are real life takeaways. So yes, divisive, but yes, important to a lot of people.
Great point.
I guess that's why I'm not using the word divisive, but because I had the same feeling as you that the aesthetic of it is what kept me from initially latching onto the film.
Like the animation? But
watching the film, it's a human story. It's a real story that just has this fantasy overlay. It's no different than Cars. I mean, it's if you are a fan of racing, you will understand all the little references and cameos they make, and that will be that much richer of a film for you, but you don't have to be a fan of automobiles to appreciate Cars. See, and I feel that that's the same way with this film.
I would have likened it to Monsters, Inc. more than Cars, because I feel like Monsters, Inc., and I think the director even did Monsters University. Monsters, Inc. has that whole monster world where it's very much its own thing. I think this was relying a lot on what our preconceived notions are of fantasy genres.
Yeah.
What I really respected about it was, like, it didn't go too in-depth on all of it. It focused on what it wanted to focus on. Like, they have this montage up top that is just like, there used to be magic, here's the fantasy world, orcs, ba da 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 da. And then, boom, it's like the magic's gone. It's just, I think that is, if once you get past that first 5 minutes, if you were kind of on the fence about the fantasy genre, I feel like this kind of comforts you. But it's interesting to hear that before seeing it, that was an element that was kind of pushing you away from it.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it too is the dark colors that are used. There's something about it that doesn't make my eyes want to watch it.
Oh, you don't like the color blue? Like, no, I'm joking.
Seriously, like a deep blue of all of the background, and maybe that's just what I'm seeing right now, because usually we watch these movies and the sky is bright, right? And great so point. We want to watch the world underneath that sky. But this was a little bit darker, and it sets that kind of mood when animation is darker like that, say The Lion King in the cave with the hyenas. That's the scary part. That's the stuff we don't love. But we love it, but we're still, that's the mood. Totally. And so that might be something too.
Did you want me to just throw to this other topic?
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all are familiar with Brother Bear. This is a great animated film from Kevin. I'm seeing
I've been
the
meaning
smile.
To see it forever.
But you haven't
seen
too. It?
I haven't.
See,
I know.
Have...
I.
It's okay.
I met Kenai at Animal Kingdom in Disney World, but I never actually saw his.
It's okay. No.
Oh, see, that's funny. I don't even know who that is. I'll stop bragging.
I'm gonna be honest. I don't think I do either.
It's one of the bears.
This is so funny. Kevin
the brother
knows all
bear.
This stuff about
Kevin
things he
more.
Hasn't done. I think this movie, it hits on a lot of similar emotions Brother Bear hits on, but with this added element of the father figure. And like, I found the most incredible story beat to be just Ian realizing, well, he didn't grow up with a dad. So he doesn't necessarily, him meeting him isn't going to actually, I think, mean as much as his brother who did know him. It's going to be, because he kind of, his brother was his dad in that way. And I thought that that was just a really interesting way to hit on this emotionally. The last thing was, just going back on this voice cast, incredible voice cast. My favorite actress of all time is Julie Louis-Dreyfus. She's my favorite actress. From Seinfeld to Veep, I think she's incredibly talented. She can do drama. People haven't seen like films she's done, like Enough Said. She's just, I think, an incredible talent.
Enough
she
said.
She is wasted in this movie.
Yeah.
Wasted. Like, I was shocked it was her. I couldn't believe.
Same.
Me too.
And
I didn't know.
I want to hear your thoughts on this. The sword moment at the end. as dope as it was, not earned. Yeah. Like, I didn't feel like, it felt like they just kind of threw that out there. I wanted that moment to mean more because it was awesome to watch. And I don't know, like, I just wish the scenes we got with her, she wasn't only utilized as, like, the straight man. Like, even when in the scenes where she's with the Manticore is hilarious.
Yeah.
But she's kind of just, like, an Uber driver. Like, I was a little shocked we didn't get more of her. I also felt like we stepped away from her for too long. Like, when we jump back to that whole situation, what are your guys' thoughts on that? I will go Kevin.
So when you're referring to the sword, you're talking about just that she wields the sword.
It and then like takes out the dragon.
I feel like to really get the right perspective on whether or not that was earned, you have to talk to a mother, because her saying, pulling out the sword to defend her children and just claiming I'm a mighty warrior, I felt
that was awesome.
Enough, because it was awesome. It was a throwback to the beginning where she's working out, and so I felt like with the, and this is probably just me reaching.
That's right, honest, it was.
I am not a mother, but I felt like they were calling back to her doing her morning exercise routine, and her being I'm a mighty warrior isn't so much that like she did some exceptional thing in order to earn that sword. It's just her being a mother and working hard every day as the caretaker for her family, and doing her exercise every morning is what allows her to wield the sword, that she's been training for this her whole life kind of thing.
It's a great point.
And I feel like the only reason I can have that point is because I'm seeing this movie in 2020 where women's empowerment and feminism and just the appreciation of what a mother does is kind of become more prevalent in the ether. So I feel like the movie is relying on that from its audience. It's hoping that the audience has that expectation for that payoff, which is technically a flaw of the film.
Yeah,
that it doesn't set it up itself. It just kind of hopes that you're on board with it, because that's the only way that it is paid off. Because you're absolutely right in that the scenes we have with her, she doesn't contribute much. She is just fulfilling the role of a caretaker and one with personality. Julia Louis-Dreyfus does an amazing job giving her a personality. I loved the mother, but as far as her role within the narrative, she's just there kind of like helping all these other characters get to their end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she is the straight man. And again, I didn't realize it was her because she was so underutilized.
I think it's also just comedically. Like, she's such a comedic presence in anything she's in, and it's always a little different. Like her comedy in Veep is so different from her chops in Seinfeld, and I think I was just expecting a little bit more, because I think everyone else, the voice cast, is having a ball in this movie. None of the performances are bad. They're all exceptionally great, and I feel like everyone's kind of playing around, like Chris Pratt and Tom Holland having a good time, and Octavia Spencer is just like chewing the scenery in the best way. And I don't know, I was just expecting a little bit more from Julia Louis-Dreyfus, his character.
I hope this doesn't ruin the trivia later. Did you know Tracy Ullman was in the movie?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they got Tracy Ullman. She plays, I'm trying to look for the name of the character because I know I'll never pronounce right. She's the pawn shop owner.
The pawn shop owner, yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
Grecklin or something like that. Oh, there it is. Yeah, Grecklin. She's the creature in the pawn shop who buys the sword and then ups the price. It's Tracy Ullman. And fitting for a cameo, but it's another thing that, like, you know, we had no idea that that was her because she's so short-lived in this. Some great comedic talents that they don't get to have their fullest extent.
Oh, yeah, they robbed her, didn't they? Remember, they just
did.
Robbed her.
Yes,
and
then
never got
she lost some money.
But she wasn't going to die or something. She would come back to life.
Yeah, the paralyzed.
What'd she say? Yeah, paralyzed.
It was a brief, like, petrifying.
Well, I'm going to jump ahead to my topics because they're all about character development.
Go for it.
And so we're going to jump right into that. I'm going to answer your question, Ryan, because I was a little taken aback by the lack of mom in this and the lack of recognition for how badass of a single mom she was.
Mm.
And how everything
just
you're right. Yeah. She took these kids from, you know, basically at birth of Ian, and she raised them and clearly didn't ask for much in return, and it's just expected of her now, and there's no praise given. And you're right, that final moment, still just an expectation instead of thanks mom, aw mom, or something. But I think key is that mom is always there for you, but we need to thank the people, especially at an age where you can, where you're capable of understanding it. And so I think that really flew under. And I was having a conversation with a friend about it yesterday, and I didn't even really take that away personally the first time. And then going back and thinking about the whole story, it happened the whole time. So not only the Julia Louise Dreyfus of it all, but just the character of it all was underappreciated, I thought. What did you guys think?
I think when this movie, I'm not trying to demean anyway, because I really like this movie a lot.
Yeah.
I think for the first third of it, it's pretty silly. It gets serious, but it's pretty silly and fun. And I think the emotional gut punch at the end, which is so good, and I was crying, when it gets that serious, it kind of makes you look at the movie a little differently. And for me, that gut punch at the end really helped made me admire the character Barley and Ian a lot more. But it also made me look back on, like, the Manticore and the mom.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. Like, the mom, maybe what they're trying to do is say, like, she is a single, strong mom, and we don't even need to to tell you that, which
for
is
sure
great. But I think when you have a moment like that sword-wielding moment and how awesome that is, I think I was expecting some kind of similar emotional beat to happen with the two brothers to happen with her, but we didn't get it. And I think, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it was just something that did bother me.
Yeah. What'd you think, Kev?
I lost my thought, to be honest.
Oh, that's okay.
It's okay. I really wanted to pay attention to what you had to say. I think the fact that I didn't notice that they weren't weren't appreciative of her throughout the film is supporting your point. I think it's very telling. It is this kind of expectation. I have to expect, if I'm going to make wild accusations about the script writing process, that they wanted the mom to have that awesome moment and give her like the badass moment. As a way of appreciating the character, of giving her something.
Sure.
If she got any reward for her efforts, it was, and that the boys now are cool with her new boyfriend, but that's it. It's everything is kind of indirect. I wonder if, and this is another, like, maybe this is why, I read that the last scene, the battle scene, was the last scene to be written and produced and all that. Mm. And I know there was a big rewrite in giving Barley his moment, because originally neither one of them were going to end up meeting their dad, and they were just going to have to accept that loss is loss.
Sure.
So they did a whole rewrite to support that thing that you had said earlier, Ryan.
Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. That's a dark ending. I don't know why they changed that.
Pixar. I'll have to pull up the tweet that Dan Scanlon did a live tweet session. He dropped a lot of information and some really good stuff. But
with Dan Scanlon, real quick, this story is actually off of his life, because he did.
Yeah,
his father did die when he was, I think, just like a few months old, and he never knew him. So there is that personal element that you're kind of alluding to.
Yeah, and so I feel like they wanted to focus on that relationship so much that to give time of the film to focus on the mother and on the manticore and have everyone have some payoff, I think maybe would have lessened or watered down what the payoff of the film was trying to do. This is all speculation. Yeah. I don't know if that's what they were thinking, but maybe.
Because
this one was, it was such a strong payoff for the brother dynamic.
Yeah.
Right.
And that maybe that was why.
I think we talk about this a lot when it comes to like indie filmmaking and personal stories where, yeah, that's the story they're telling. They're telling a story of two brothers. So let's focus on that and the other people, let them do their thing on the side. But there's the other element to where this is a giant, huge studio film that is seen by millions and millions of people. So do they owe the world a little something more than the 1-2-sided story? I don't know.
I'll say this. They could have given her some thank yous and it wouldn't have detracted.
100%. 2 seconds. Anyway, moving on. Kevin, you have some emotional detail to share about how you were affected by this film. Let's talk about it.
Like I said, I'm constantly impressed by the way that Pixar keeps meaning to one up their game. And
yeah,
I remember like, I saw a movie about fish and, you know, and it made me really teary-eyed. And then I saw a movie about fictional characters and I cried. And then I saw a movie about plastic toys and somehow that was more emotional than any other thing I'd ever seen. And then they did one about robots who don't talk and I'm bawling. And so now I'm seeing a movie with the half of a person. You have a character who is just legs. That's all he is. He communicates purely through dance and like moving his feet around. And somehow I'm fully attached to this character. I don't know how Pixar keeps managing to pull this off, having a character that is less and less relatable and that communicates through more and more hindrances. Like the language barrier there is immense, but I'm still completely drawn in by Dad. You know, I don't know how they do it.
I feel like being half a human, though, is a relatable feeling. And that's why it got you. Because, you know, I know, deep, right to the heart, hit you. But really, though, he was just a person that could only communicate in a certain way and had a lot of feelings, but only could do certain things to show them. And I think that's very human, whether you have a full body or not. And so I think that that's kind of the tragedy of the whole thing and why we relate to it, because we often feel the same way that the dad feels and the people around us often to themselves feel the same way that Ian and Barley do.
Completely agree.
Damn, Trina.
I know. I know. But that's really, that's how I felt too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, that was another thing that kind of like kept me from really attaching to the movie when they were promoting it. I was like, it's so weird to do this Weekend at Bernie's thing with half of a person,
you know.
And I just thought it was kind of this silly, unrelatable thing. And then I don't know how they do it. They between Barley's tapping on the feet being like a way to relate to him or connect. And this is, hi Dad, this is me. Him stepping out as to like hold hands with them, and then the dancing scene, and then being like, oh, his dancing is terrible. Like, it just, all of it was super relatable and earnest, and I just couldn't believe how clever the studio was for writing this.
Yeah,
for sure. Ryan, any final thoughts on that?
Final thoughts, I think you know, personally, I like that the idea of, you know, the father like legs down and then just trying to get the top half back. I think The Weekend at Bernie's bit for me got a little old after a while. Just that comedic bit. Like, I thought it was funny when they're dancing or when they like run into the fairies, the pink fairies. But
going through the convenience store.
Right.
Yeah.
I think after that, though, I was getting like a little tired of it. And it's tough because it's a really funny and clever plot point. to go off on, but it got a little old for me here and there, and I think that just fell in line with like the quest opportunities. Even though the each little barrier or thing they or just triumph they had to cross, I thought was the emotional core that like that builds up for that gut at the end. But it just got a little old. Like, I don't think they really knew what to do with the dad legs. For the latter half.
While they were questing, there were so many moments in the movie where I kept looking back to the back seat and being like, so what's his experience right now? Because no one's talking with him. No one's sitting next to him. Yeah. He's just has to wait. And I felt bad for the, but because they built, did such a great job of building him up as an actual character for me. And then once they had done that, I was like, no one's paying attention to this character. They're just leaving him in the dark. And I felt bad for the half of a person.
Yeah.
I felt bad for the legs.
Yeah, of course.
So that, I feel like, that was kind of a, I don't know if it's catch 22, but they kind of shot themselves in the foot for doing such a great job.
All right, guys. Well, before we get into giving you all our final review of the film, let's do some quick trivia, shall we?
Yes. Love Trina's trivia.
All right.
Oh, that's
we'll
got to be the name of this. Trina's trivia, right?
Wow. Okay, maybe I'm genius.
It does write itself.
We've got 5 questions, so we've got a short amount of time. Y'all ready?
Fire away.
Okay. First question. Which cast member has their own self-titled television comedy show from 1987 to 1990 and did a second run of the show from 2016 to 2018? Say your name to answer.
Kevin?
Yes, Kevin.
Was it Tracy Ullman?
Yes, it was.
Okay, ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding.
I said it first because I knew. Have you ever seen it, Ryan?
I have not.
You would love, watch the old one. It's incredible.
I'll write it down.
Okay, next question. Which cast member made history in 2017 for winning an Emmy? History.
Oh, hold on.
I think I know this.
Say your name.
I want to give you a chance, Ryan. You had your chance. Kevin.
Kevin.
Oh, he said Emmy. Oh, I was going to say Octavia Spencer.
Ryan.
That's my favorite part.
I'm going, Lena Waithe.
Yes. For what?
By the way, I don't know.
It's okay. You get the point.
You know what? I'm
way,
relying
okay.
just on like pop culture knowledge. And I know that this is the first, I think this is the first gay Pixar character, right? It was in a movie.
It's the first
openly outed
gay Pixar character in a Disney property.
Perfect. Boom. Well, she was the first Black woman to win for comedy writing.
No way.
Yeah, for Master of None.
Oh my gosh.
So good. The episode two is so good. Please watch the episode. Moving on. Which cast member released a hilarious memoir in November 2019? If that's too hard, I can give a quick hint.
I'm Ryan Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
No.
Damn.
Kevin?
Oh man, I gotta pull up the whole cast.
No, pulling up. There's no pulling.
A memoir. Okay, so. I think I know who it is, but I don't know the name. I know the.
Okay,
character.
I'm gonna give a quick hint.
Okay.
The book is constructed as a set of letters to her young daughters.
Ryan, can I go again?
Yeah, Ryan.
Octavia Spencer.
No.
Damn, I'm out. I'm out. I lose.
One more guess, Kevin.
All right.
I'll give another hint for you, Kev. Played one of the police officers.
Oh,
Kevin.
Yeah.
Ali Wong.
Oh.
Yeah. It's called Dear Girls, and it's really, really good.
I did not know she wrote a memoir. That's awesome.
Which cast member starred in a sitcom based in Wisconsin for 8 seasons?
Oh, dang, Kevin.
Kevin?
Chris Pratt.
No.
Wasn't it? That was Illinois. Dang it. Oh.
Please stop confusing the Midwest. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Ryan? Stop looking. I know what you're looking at.
I apologize to everyone in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois.
It's not a woman.
Okay, I don't know. I fold.
It's
Kevin. Wilmar Valderrama.
Yeah. Who did he play?
Okay. Hello, Wisconsin. He played Fez in that 70s show.
No, but who did he play in the movie?
Oh, he was the father's friend who Ian ran into at the fast food restaurant.
Yes. Okay. One more. Kevin's winning. Kevin, I think maybe already won, but one more.
I gotta make up for upsetting all three of those states.
Okay. Which cast member starred alongside Drew Barrymore in a cult classic?
I'm trying to go through Drew Barrymore's catalog and think of all her co-stars.
Everyone give at least one guess. Say your
name
to go first.
Okay, Brian, Chris Pratt.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Kevin John Ratzenberger, because he's in every Pixar film and we haven't talked about him yet.
No, that is incorrect. It is Octavia Spencer, and she starred in Never Been Kissed.
Oh,
gosh.
I didn't know that.
Oh, and you know what? She is a cameo in Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. I just found out this weekend.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. All right, guys, that is it for trivia today. Let's move on to quickly tell what our rating is for the film. So this movie is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes at a 95%.
Yeah.
I believe, 95%. And then the audience score was 87%. And IMDb is 7.5 out of 10. Let's go the IMDb route today and do out of 10. Kevin, give it to us.
I need to see it again. I haven't seen it since I saw it in theaters to give a really accurate rating. But after talking about it, I realized that, the middle section of the quest is a little long and drawn out and could be tightened up a bit. So I'm going to go 8 out of 10.
Perfect. Ryan?
You know, I think this movie packed such an emotional punch. I was bawling at the end. I think this movie delivered. I think it's really fun if you're into fantasy, sci-fi, and I think the brotherly dynamic was so strong that I can overlook a lot of these other faults that I have with it. I do think, there were some parts where it meandered a little bit too much for me, but overall, I really love this, and I think it is top-tier Pixar. It's probably not, top 5 by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think it's in the conversation for top 10, top 12. I'm going 8.4 out of 10.
Whoa. Yeah. All right. So
specific you were.
Exactly. Always. That's specific. Four.
Couldn't
always
give it that extra 0.1. No.
Welcome to Ryan Nilsson. So I had very low expectations for the film and it proved me wrong about 75%. So
what's the average?
I don't know. I'm guessing numbers, Ryan. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So I liked it for the most part. Didn't love some of the character development, but did love the characters that they did develop. So for that, I will give it a 7 out of 10, which I think is fair.
Okay.
So that's an average of a 7.8 out of 10.
7.8 out of 10. You heard it here first from us. The anatomy of a movie. Onward, 7.8 out of 10. That will be it for our show today. Kevin, where can the audience find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at Kevin Allen Says and Instagram at Kevin Allen Graham.
Ryan?
You guys can find me at Ryan Nilsson on Twitter, at Ryan Nilsson _ on Instagram, and Thursday Star Wars News, 4 p.m. PST on the Popcorn Talk Network. Please subscribe. We got a ton of awesome shows each and every day. Guilty Movie Pleasures tomorrow at 6 p.m. Trina, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Hey Trina Dong. Thanks everybody so much for tuning in to this episode of Anatomy of a Movie. Go watch Onward on Disney Plus right now and let us know in the comments what you think. Thanks, guys. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.